Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Keep or Cut podcast, a Pitcherless Podcast Network podcast that is coming at you with episode 129. I'm your host today, Pete Ball, joined by Chad Young. Chad, we are absolutely even more in the thick of draft season right now than we were last week. So what's your week looking like for drafts? Because this is the most exciting week of the year for me. This is like Christmas.
Oh, I have two drafts. They're both Tuesday. So that's it. And then I'm done. That's the end of my draft season.
Wow. You are an early drafter.
Yeah. You know, I play a decent chunk of my leagues are leagues where I aim to be early because there are leagues that are being used for content, right? So like we did our listener leagues early because we wanted to be able to talk about them on the show before other people drafted. Cause like, I don't know, if we did our listener leagues this week, and then we're like, here's analysis from our listener league drafts. People are like, yeah, but my draft was last week. It doesn't do me any good. It's like, I wanted to get those in early. We have that Fangraph staff league. It's all writers. We have the podcasters league. That wasn't even that early, but it was somewhat early. So like, I have a bunch that get front loaded. And then I also, selfishly, as the commissioner of most of my leagues, this is the time of year that my kids start having multiple sports overlapping. Mm-hmm. And so once my son adds baseball to his regular repertoire of sports, it makes things really busy. And so like, even this week, this one Tuesday night is going to be a challenge. So yeah, I try to get everything done early, man. Early.
No, that totally makes sense. This week is different for me. You and I are obviously in a lot of leagues together at this point. So a lot of my leagues have drafted, TGFBI, which I had Yuri Perez. Yikes. Ugh. Maybe we'll talk about that. Maybe we won't. I have Kevin Gausman also going to start the year in the IL. So it's actually looking a lot like last year.
Is Gausman on the IL? I thought they had said he...
The general vibe is upbeat. He had a good side session, but it looks like he's going to start the year on the IL. I think the manager, I can't remember his name, said something like, look, if he only makes 30 starts instead of 32, but he's healthy, that's what we want. So as long as he's okay... I don't mind that at all, especially with how pitchers have been dropping left and right. We haven't even talked about Gerrit Cole. Goodness. See if we get to that. Gerrit Cole doesn't really go with today's theme, but I'm sure we can find time for him. But I have two drafts tonight, which from a keeper league perspective are pretty exciting. One is a 12-team roto that it's actually more a dynasty. We just leave two roster spots open. And what's exciting about that draft tonight, even though, this league's going into its 15th year. That in and of itself is exciting.
That's fun,
And we've never redrafted, so this is just from the beginning, you know, Dynasty League. Anyway, new players to the pool we have a draft for, and the draft order is randomized by ESPN 1 hour before the draft. So basically, it's the Yamamoto sweepstakes, and everybody's going to be sweating it out all day to figure out, you know, at 6 o'clock or whatever, we'll see who gets Yamamoto.
Is it both new players like Yamamoto and like a first year player draft? Like is Langford in there?
So he's supposed to be. I have two dynasty leagues and I have two dynasty leagues. In one, the rules were ironclad. You can't add players, even though they might get added to the ESPN player pool. But like, this is where ESPN bothers me so much, Chad. Been playing on it for 2 decades, and for the majority of those 2 decades, when players got drafted to the MLB in June, they were not added to the player pool until the next season. ESPN randomly decided 2 years ago, you know what? Let's just throw them in there. And that threw dynasty leagues into chaos because people all of a sudden were like, oh, I can just bid on this guy. Whereas other managers didn't even know they were available yet. So in one league that was ironclad, it wasn't allowed. But in this particular one, those players were added to the pool. They started getting added. There was no rule against it. So he just kind of rolled with it. Yamamoto, though, obviously wasn't in the player pool after the MLB draft because he wasn't drafted in the MLB draft. So this really is the Imanaga and Yamamoto sweepstakes. The other one, just a brag. Yeah. The other one is a 14-team three keeper. My three keepers, Chad, you can let me know if these are good. In the 21st round with the 292nd pick, I'll keep Gunnar Henderson. In the 22nd round with the 297th pick, I'll keep Spencer Strider. And then in the 23rd round with the 320th pick, I will keep Corbin Carroll. So feeling pretty good about that league there. Yeah. Did not win it last year, though. So
in a keep three with a cost like that, the first, couple rounds of the draft are going to be like they'll be deflated, but there will still be talent there. So you're going to end up with, you know, maybe not like you may not get another true first round value in that draft, depending on where you pick, but you're going to get like, you already have a couple first rounders, a second rounder, something like that. And now you're going to get like another second and a third, or another second, maybe two more seconds, depending on again, where you are in the draft order. That's a pretty sweet way to start a team.
It is. It is. I have the fourth pick, and the only like absolute top tier, no question player available is Freddie Freeman. He will be gone for sure, but it should still come out pretty strong. But that's enough about my keeper leagues. I'm just pretty excited about them. In case you couldn't tell, I'm excited to get drafting this week. Got a ton of drafts this week. Chad and I today are going to be talking about late round values, but also, you know, auction values as well. For those of you that participate in auctions, you know, who are those $1 values? Chad published an article this week on FanGraphs just titled $1 Ought New Targets. If you're a big Ought New player, I'm sure you've already seen it, but you may not have. It just came out 3 days ago. And so I'm going to tee Chad up with some questions about this article. And we're also going to talk kind of about just $1 guys that we've found that we have interest in, as well as guys late in drafts who, you know, whether it be due to spring training performances or just the fact that we like them, you know, we're kind of targeting late in drafts. So, Chad, why don't you start things off? Oh, hit the pause button. We have to talk about jersey numbers. It's episode 129. Yeah. Chad, I don't know about you. I filtered for war. I think there's one clear-cut option, a pretty good second option, and then the guy third hates baseball, so I don't want to include him in this.
Yeah, John Smoltz does not seem to be a fan of the direction baseball's going at any time. It doesn't matter what direction baseball takes. He's just mad about it. Yeah. I also just, I mean, John Smoltz was a great pitcher. I have nothing against him. I just like, at no point in his career was he like a personal favorite, anything like that. I just like, I had no love there. I don't mind passing on him. The first two, yeah, Beltre and Carew, that's a pretty good pair of players. I mean, I obviously like, you know, Carew retired when I was three, so I didn't see him probably at all. It's possible I saw him, but I don't remember. Whereas, you know, Adrian Beltre, I remember him coming up with the Dodgers and the start of his career and some of those disappointing years, and then just how great he was for most of those years. One of the better defensive third baseman I'll probably ever see. So I would lean towards Beltre, but you know, Rod Carew does get mentioned in rap songs and stuff occasionally. So maybe that's, maybe I've never heard Adrian Beltre come up in a song. So
that could make up the 12 war difference between the two right there.
Yeah,
for sure.
It could.
I will also vote Beltre. He spent a magical year with the Red Sox. Wish we re-upped him. Hit a home run while on one knee. I don't know if you've ever seen that highlight before.
Yeah.
Just what a strong guy. So all in on Adrian Beltre. So there you go. Episode 129, jersey number 29, the Adrian Beltre episode. Chad, I want to give you a chance to just kind of give us an overview of this article. You know, if there's a more specific place that folks can find it, obviously, you know, we can link it in the notes as well. But general thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, to find it, if you search, like Google search FanGraphs, Chad Young or something like that, it should just bring up my archive. It's the most recent one in there. You said it's called $1 Auto New Targets. I tried to do sort of two different related things with this article. The first thing to write it, the first thing I did was I took the draft results of every draft I had been in so far. It's theoretically possible for me to get like every $1 player taken in every auto new draft, but it's challenging. And so I went for ease of use here and just went through my drafts. I've been through five. It felt like enough to get a good sample. And I have a table at the bottom of this article that literally lists every single player. There were across those five auctions, 313 times a player was picked up for $1, 210 unique players. So obviously some of those players picked up more than once across the different auctions. So what I tried to do was both create that table to share that so people could look at that table and be like, oh, here's like a laundry list of every player who might be a buck. But then I also went through the five players that I had picked up for a dollar more than once. I picked them all up twice so far, and broke them into categories, because for me, when I think about $1 players, like, I get to the end of the draft. This is true at the end of a, it's true of an end of a snake draft as well. It's like, there are different things I'm looking to do with those last roster spots, depending on how the rest of my roster has been built out. And so I spelled out that, like, when I get to those $1 guys, I am looking for, I've got my $1 relievers. I have harped on this forever that, like, I don't believe in spending a lot on relievers. And so I'm always at the end of draft looking like, who are guys I can grab for a buck? Maybe not even at the end of draft. Sometimes these guys, like, it's the middle of the draft, and I'm just like, I will nominate, you know, Tim Mesa and see what happens. And I picked up Brock Stewart a couple times that way. A few other guys who are examples there. I had a category I called I Do One Thing and I Do It Well. And these are guys like Elijuriz Montero is sort of the guy that's the example here. But Elias Diaz is an example. Jonah Heim is an example of guys who, like, Heim mashes lefties. Diaz and Montero are crush the ball at home at Coors. Like, I don't need them to be great. I don't need them to, I'm not looking for them to get better. I'm not looking for them to turn a corner. Just like, I will slot you in when you're doing the thing I know you can do. And that's that. I had a category called He Might Help, which is sort of a vague way of looking at guys like Frankie Montas is the example here, where it was like, it's late in a draft and I might need more innings. Okay, I'm going to pick up Montas. Again, it's not so much, you know, other guys I put here, Chris Paddock, Tyler Wells, JP Sears, and Justin Foscue, who are guys who I'm just like, it's not that I'm expecting this guy to, like, turn a corner, become a star, but they can fill a role. They can fill in, they can help me hit my games max. They can help me, you know, fill my innings. Some of these guys have sort of moved. Like, I think JP Sears has actually moved to the next category. I had Zach Little, Littell. Do you know if Zach Little or Zach Littell? I assume it's Little. I don't know.
I always thought it was Littell, but
okay. Well, yeah. Zach from the Rays, whatever it is. Like, I have him as, like, an upside play. I have Logan Allen from the Guardians, Andy Paez from the Dodgers. Like, these are guys that I can get for a dollar. And it's not because I think I'm going to slot them into my lineup regularly today, but I think there might be another level to their game. And I want them on my roster to find that out. Those two groups sort of blend together a little bit. Like, I originally was taking JP Sears as a, like, yeah, he'll throw some innings. They'll be decent. He looks great this spring. We've actually talked about him on the show a little bit already. It's like, maybe he's more of an upside play now, and that's fine. And then I had a category I called under-respected prospects. It's a weird name because the only thing that makes these guys under-respected is that I got them for a dollar. Like, that's it. Because, like, some of the names that are on here, the guy I've gotten multiple times is Robbie Snelling, who's a pitching prospect I really like. AJ Smith-Shawver, who was going for way more than that last year. Drew Gilbert, who's like a top 30-ish prospect and starting the year in AAA and should be up at some point this year. Like, there's guys in this list that are not actually broadly under-respected, but I call them under-respected because they got through to me for a buck. So obviously no one else in the league wanted them or had room for them or whatever it is. And that is the other thing I'll do with those $1 pickups is, like, grab a prospect who I'm interested in. Another thing I've talked about before, but for me, prospects, I either want guys who I think could be, like, top 10, maybe top 20 by next year, or guys who are going to be up this year. And so if you look at that list, like, Robbie Snelling is either going to, like, break through this year and get a call up, or going to be an elite pitching prospect, or I'll cut him. AJ Smith-Shawver should be up this year. Brady House, I think, is a guy who with a breakout year could be a top 15-20 prospect. If he's not, I'll cut him. So, like, that's sort of how I'm thinking about those guys. So, yeah.
Love it. Again, folks should check that out, and I'll just link it in the show notes when that's posted. So one thing I wanted to throw out to you, Chad, that definitely caught my eye first because it was earlier on in the article. Jonah Heim for a dollar. It made me think kind of big picture, and we've kind of talked about this before, just waiting on catcher. Because Jonah Heim, like, until he strained or tore, I can't recall, a tendon in his wrist. Like, he was like right behind Sean Murphy before Sean Murphy fell apart, of like second best catcher in fantasy last year. Like, he was awesome. And although, you know, if you look at the underlying numbers, and you could even say this about his underlying numbers back in 2022, where he also performed pretty well that season, not as well as he was last year, that like they're not that great, that maybe the surface level stats are a little inflated, but that Rangers lineup is so good. So should we just be waiting? If you can get Jonah Heim for a dollar, should we just be like waiting on catcher completely?
I think this is where you have to know your league format and rules and how things are likely to play out at a draft, because I think you can, but like in an auto new league where teams have 40 roster spots, everybody, almost everybody's going to carry two catchers. And some teams might carry three if they're like there may be someone out there who's like, you know what, I'll go $2 on Jonah Heim to be my third catcher and I'll trade somebody later or whatever. Heim, like that, where I got Heim, that was the only time he went for $1 across all of my drafts. So you can't necessarily count on that. Other catchers who I see on my list who went for $1, Ryan Jeffers went for $1. I really like him, but
you know, different tier for sure.
He's different tier. Tyler Stevenson, who's more of like, to me, he's more upside play than a guy you want to be relying on. I mentioned Elias Diaz, I picked up for $1. So it's, there are guys out there, but unless you get a little bit lucky to have it be Heim or someone like that, Alejandro Kirk, Austin Wells have both gone for $1 three times out of the five drafts I looked at. So like, that's you're getting for $1 if you really wait. My CBS league, which is one of the ones drafting Tuesday, 12 team league, 25 man rosters. It's head to head and we don't have a super deep bench. I think with a 25 man roster, I think we only have five bench spots. You need a couple of extra pitchers in order to win the pitching categories. And so you're really only carrying three bench bats. Almost nobody carries two catchers in this league. It's just not, you can't justify it, because like that Sunday afternoon where your starter's not playing, your backup's also not playing. And now like you've wasted a bench spot. So rarely does that happen. Looking at our roster grid right now, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams entering the auction with one catcher. And those teams, like one team is Yiner Diaz, Adley Rutschman, JT Realmuto, Cal Raleigh. One team has Will Smith and Francisco Alvarez. So that is eight catchers gone. But another team has Salvador Perez. Another has William Contreras. That is seven teams. Those teams are all set at catcher. I highly doubt any of them will bid on a catcher. I am not one of those teams, so I do need a catcher in that league. Here are the top free agent catchers according to CBS. So I'm going to try to pull up some names that might be lower on CBS's ranks that I still like. But Sean Murphy, Wilson Contreras, Mitch Garver, Bo Naylor, Gabriel Moreno, Keibert Ruiz, Jonah Heim, Luis Camposano. Then you get Stevenson, Jeffers, Danny Jansen, who's now hurt, Elias Diaz, Austin Wells, Kirk. And I think that's about, you know, Gary Sanchez is on there. But you're I'm starting to run out of names that I really care about. But even I stopped counting at eight. So as I said, seven teams have catchers. There are five teams looking for catchers. If I assume that they go in this order, it's an auction. Let's just still assume that like somebody bids and spends on Wilson Contreras. Somebody bids and spends on Sean Murphy. Somebody bids and spends on Mitch Garver. Somebody bids and spends on Bo Naylor. Now 11 teams have catchers. And I get to spend $1 on Gabby Moreno, Keibert Ruiz, Jonah Heim, or Luis Camposano. And like, yeah, no, I'm going to do that. I'm just going right. to wait. And, you know, I'm going to, one thing I might do is try to nominate some of those catchers early and see, because I'll be honest, like if I'm going to get one of these guys for $1, my preference would probably be Wilson Contreras, because I think he's, well, him or Murphy, one of those two is the guy I would like to have for $1. I'm not going to get those guys for $1. So I want teams to go bid on them, put them on their rosters and be done. Of the guys after that, Garver, Naylor, Moreno are sort of the next three for me. Ruiz in there as well. I think Naylor's the guy I want. And so I may try to nominate like Moreno or Garver a little bit earlier and see what happens. If I get them for $1, fine. That's my dollar guy. So be it. If somebody bids $2, great. Then they take them for $2 and I get myself a shot late in the draft to get Naylor for a buck when everyone else is done with catcher. Awesome. You know, we'll see how it plays out. But that one, yeah, I'm going to wait on catcher. Auto new drafts, I've been a little... First of all, auto new drafts, I've kept catchers because last year I was in on like Moreno, Ohapi, Naylor. Like I was in on a bunch of those guys. And so most of my leagues, I'm set at catcher. But I'm a little more hesitant to wait at catcher in those leagues because I think you could end up in the Wells, Diaz, Kirk, Stevenson tier. And I'm not quite as comfortable there.
Yeah, that's totally fair. You know, you brought up, it was almost like you were like looking at exactly what I was looking at. I was like, all right, what catchers have I got for a dollar? And so I'm at least one of the three Austin Wellses, and I'm at least one of the three Alejandro Kirks. I think the wrist injury to Danny Jansen does make Alejandro Kirk for a dollar a little bit more interesting. I know that, you know, you've long been a fan of Alejandro Kirk. You kind of turned me on to him. And with, you know, I was worried about Kirk going into the season. The Blue Jays, rather than actually making an impactful move, just brought in like a bunch of dudes, some old, some kind of old, to fill in a lot of those positions. And, you know, if Votto gets called up and you've got George Springer hurt all the time, now you've got Justin Turner in the fold. It's like, I don't see a lot of DH at bats for Alejandro Kirk at that point. So with Jansen healthy, that's concerning. But this is a wrist fracture for Danny Jansen. It's a small one. It's only supposed to be a couple of weeks, but like he's a catcher. Like that could really impact his play and lead to more plate appearances for Alejandro Kirk. So it's my long way of saying I kind of like that one. I think the long story short is, even though the theme here is a dollar, you don't want to be in the dollar tier maybe with your starting catcher, but I think you can go cheap. And I'm thinking of League 13, one of my favorite leagues that I'm in. It's your Fangraphs points league. I was able to get, I didn't even mean to get him. I saw JT Realmuto for $5 and there was like 3 seconds left. And I was like, oh, what the heck? No, I'll bid six and, you know, someone will bid me up eventually to like eight or nine and I just won't get him. That's fine. I got JT Realmuto for $6 and I already had Bo Naylor in the fold. So my two catchers are a total of $10 and I have Bo Naylor and JT Realmuto. I don't think that's some amazing situation. I think that's just kind of like where you should find yourself if you play the position right with two decent, cheap options. So I don't mean to make this too much about catcher, but it does seem oddly deeper than it usually is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking around at my leagues. I'll do a quick review. I've got in League One, I have Logan Ohapi and Gabriel Moreno for $11 total. In 13, the one you were just talking about, I've got Moreno for $5. That's a head-to-head league, and I typically will only carry one catcher. There's nothing wrong with carrying two, but I typically only carry one, so I'm fine with that. I've got a $7 Keibert Ruiz and a $3 Henry Davis in
love that 32. $3 Davis.
Yeah. And I spent all offseason shopping him, thinking I might cut him, and then finally was like, all right, fine. And
make me keep this good player.
Yeah. The $1 Heim that I picked up, I have him and a $3 Mitch Garver.
Oh, which I think is like awesome.
I love that combination because I can just play that like Garver's going to miss time and they both have their warts, but I can play them when I need to play them. And then our listener league, I have an $8 Ohapi, which is getting a little high for Ohapi, but I still feel pretty good about it, and a $3 Naylor. And then the podcaster league, I have $1 Elias Diaz and $8 Yiner Diaz. Like, so yeah, I think you look across all of those leagues and basically in all of them, I've got a pair of catchers for somewhere between, I mean, as low as $4, but really somewhere between $8 to $12 for two catchers. By the way, the one league that hasn't drafted yet, I have my auction Tuesday, I have Ohapi for $6 and Moreno for $4. So I'm going to be in the same boat there. I kept those guys. Like, I feel good. All those leagues, I have two catchers, both of whom I like for at least some purpose. For like $10 total, I think you can do that in basically any league anytime you want this year.
Exactly. And I think that's got to be the approach with catcher. So, Chad, let me, I want to throw out a crazy hypothetical situation to you. Okay. I tell you, you can bat leadoff for any MLB team and you have to score one run this season. One run. And if you do, I'll give you $10 million. What lineup would you be like, that's the one I want to bat leadoff for?
Am I replacing their leadoff hitter or can I
yes.
like...
you're replacing them. You're taking their spot, and then whoever normally bats second, whoever normally bats third will be behind you.
Because Acuna leads off, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, if I could replace, like, I don't know, if I could play catcher for Atlanta and they could just, like, have Acuna hit second instead of first, I would just be like, yeah, I could lean into a pitch at some point.
Me personally, I think I'd want a DH, but if you want to catch Spencer Strider, go nuts.
Well, fair enough. I'll replace Ozuna. That works too. Honestly, like, I don't have to let them win a game. You know, it actually just helps my cause, because if I'm the catcher, the game's going to be a disaster. And then by the time it's like 15 to nothing, the other team's just gonna, like, they're going to have position players pitching. I'll have a better chance of getting on base.
You don't want the studs behind you to be taken out of the game. So, like, that's got to come in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting challenge. I do think it would have to be Atlanta. I don't know. The only other thing I could think is, like, do you pick a team that has just pure power behind their leadoff guy? Because, like, do I want to be on the Yankees? Because if I get on base, like, Judge or Stanton might or Rizzo or someone just might hit one out, and then I don't even have to run. Because if somebody hits a double, I'm screwed.
Me too. But they also have that guy Juan Soto there now, by the way. So right now, the Yankees projected lineup on Roster Resource. Second is Juan Soto. Third is Aaron Judge. So I'm glad you got to the Yankees there, because that would be my choice. I think the Dodgers are a totally fine choice as well, obviously. But that little short porch, I think, could work out great for Juan Soto, who looks like a cross between Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, and, I don't know, Ricky Henderson this spring training. DJ LeMahieu, longtime favorite of mine, is not only on your list of players who are acquired for a dollar twice, but is set to bat leadoff for the New York Yankees. Now, look, the skills at the plate have clearly declined the last two seasons. I'm not trumpeting DJ LeMahieu like I used to. He's not going to be in MVP talks like he was for a season and a half a few years ago. But I don't know. I think if he continues to get on base at the clip that he normally gets on base at, you know, he's pretty solid. He can get his bat on the ball. He can make things happen at the beginning of games. He's going to have Juan Soto and Aaron Judge batting behind him. And I see him. I was one of the teams that got him for a dollar. So this is obviously a little bit of a biased point of view. But we could be talking about a 100-run season for DJ LeMahieu. We really could. And so you're in your really any of your new leagues, and certainly in your 5x5s, I think LeMahieu is all of a sudden, I went from, I'll be honest, having no interest in him. I thought the playtime probably wasn't going to be there, blah, blah, blah. But if he really is going to bat leadoff in front of Soto and Judge, I'm back in, especially if the cost is a dollar. So kind of a twofold question there. Are you with me on LeMahieu, or are you out? And are there other players who, due to circumstances, not necessarily their skills, but just because of where they are, you think they're going for a dollar that is really kind of appealing?
Yeah, so LeMahieu, I think the question for me on LeMahieu is the strikeout rate, because it jumped last year, and his thing has always been he doesn't strike out, but he struck out, I think, 22% of the time. Yeah, like, if that's going to stick, then, I mean, he hit leadoff more than he hit in any other spot last year. It wasn't quite the majority of the time, but it was more than he hit anywhere else. And he played 136 games, 562 plate appearances. I don't think you can expect a whole lot more than that out of him in terms of playing time. And he had 55 runs last year. I don't think Soto adds 45 to that total. Now, Soto adds something to that total. And I think that LeMahieu cutting his career strikeout rate is 15.2%. And he'd been, like, over the, I don't know what this is, like, 7 years leading up to last year, he was at 13.2%. So, like, 22.2 last year is just a huge jump. If that comes back down to, like, 15%, like, that'll get him on base a lot more. That'll add a lot more runs. Soto helps. I think you have to watch that early, because if he's not correcting the strikeout rate, then the on-base percentage isn't going to come back up. And, I mean, looking at the Yankees lineup, like, if he's not getting on base at a high clip and they are insisting on continuing to use Alex Verdugo, who I personally believe should be on their bench. Verdugo also makes sense as a leadoff hitter, especially if he gets back to like the 350, 360 type on base numbers he was putting up with Boston a couple years ago. Anthony Volpe, if he turns a corner, could make a lot of sense at the top of that order instead of the bottom of that order. I don't know who else could realistically replace LeMahieu. Like, I don't think, I mean, they could just go Soto, Judge, Rizzo at the top, or Judge, Soto, Rizzo for that matter. Like, I would go Soto, Judge. I don't know why I said the other, but like, they could just put those guys up there. So like, there are, I think, a handful of options or possibilities for LeMahieu to lose that leadoff job. So I think it's, I mean, that, I guess it's to say that's why he's going for a buck, right? I think in your 5x5 leagues, he's an interesting $1 play, because if the on-base percentage comes back and he stays in that leadoff spot, he looks interesting. You can move on quickly from a $1 guy if the strikeout rate doesn't come back, if he doesn't look like he's staying in that leadoff spot, whatever. In like, I don't know, points leagues, being leadoff does help. I'm just not sure he does enough for me to be that excited about him, but for a dollar, I have no issue with it.
I think that's, yeah, no, that makes total sense. You know, the Yankees offense, I'd say last year wasn't just without Juan Soto, right? I mean, it was a disaster. Yeah. Anthony Rizzo with the concussion seemed like, I mean, he'll even tell you, was kind of like lost just out there. Aaron Judge, less, I think it was like 450 plate appearances. So I think there could be a perfect scenario where a $1 DJ works out, but you're right. If at the beginning of the season, you know, the strikeout rate is kind of a repeat of last season and the on-base percentage isn't coming back, he's kind of an easy cut at that point, because he will lose that leadoff job, whether it's to Volpe, Verdugo, Trent Grisham, longtime favorite of the show, yeah, who, you know, maybe should be starting over for Verdugo, like you said. So, you know, he is interesting, but we'll see. Go ahead.
Just on the Grisham thing, I think the thing that seems weird to me is, I don't remember, like a year or two ago, there was an article that came out, maybe from The Athletic, talking about how hard it is to play center field, and talking about like how there hasn't been a ton of great center field offense lately. And it was focused around Brandon Nimmo, I think. And he was just saying like, look, it's brutal to play that position every day, and it really impacts your offense. And the fact that the Yankees have an MVP caliber corner outfielder who's calling, he's a good defender, but his calling card is his bat, who has health issues, including a toe thing that he has said will basically require management his entire career. And their decision is, we need Verdugo in the lineups more than Grisham so badly that we're going to downgrade our defense and increase what we're asking of Aaron Judge, and make it like they're actively saying, we would rather have 150 games of Verdugo and 130 of Judge than have 150 games of Grisham and 150 of Judge. Because I really think that's the difference of making him play center field. And it's just, I don't know, it seems crazy to me. But that your other question for me was, are there other guys for a buck based purely on situation? There's some names that come to mind. I'm going to try to stick to the guys who went like more than once, because some of these guys who went one time, it's like, it's not that interesting. Esteury Ruiz, we've talked a little bit about him. He seemed like he was turning a corner in September, and he's had a great spring. And even in Fangraphs points leagues, where we talk about his, you know, we talk about speed is not that important. It's not. And it's not that important, because each stolen base is worth, like, you know, by the time you factor in caught stealings, like, you basically get a point per stolen base, something like that. That doesn't seem like a ton. But when you steal at the volume Ruiz stole at last year, you're talking about a half a point per game, more than half. Actually, it's more like 0.6 or 0.7 point per game increase in his production just off his steals, which means if he can be a mediocre offensive outfielder and then add that on top of it. Plus, I think there's a good chance he leads off if he is hitting. Right now, a roster resource doesn't have that. But if he's hitting enough, he could lead off or should lead off. And then he gets those extra plate appearances every day. And same thing in your 5x5 leagues and stuff. If you can get, I mean, he's not going that cheap in 5x5 because of the steals, but I think there's some upside in that bat based on what we saw late last year and in spring so far. Another name that comes to mind for me is Garrett Crochet. He went for $2 or for $1 in two of those five leagues. I think that there is a chance he could take the closer role at some point. I will see how the White Sox use him, but I like guys like I like him and like Mason Miller falls into a similar camp, although he's not going for a buck. Of they're in the bullpen, they're useful in the bullpen, but they also are basically like a bonus pitching prospect because those teams are still talking about them long term as starters. So if I have a choice between stashing, like sometimes you don't want to stash an extra pitching prospect, right? Robbie Snelling came up on this list. Crochet, he could be Snelling, except he pitches out of the bullpen most of the year and gives you value while you're waiting on him to be a starter next year. That's a pretty fun little sort of bonus opportunity. Yeah, other than that, I mean, Ryan O'Hearn is another guy who, like, he should be doing, I don't know where they have him playing or hitting for Baltimore. That team is so crowded that it's just hard to imagine what his role will be. But as of right now, they have him at first base with Mountcastle at DH hitting 5 and 6. If O'Hearn is hitting fifth for the Orioles, yeah, I'm in on that for a buck.
Yeah, I like the O'Hearn call out. I just trade Mountcastle, please. You know, like he's killed by the park. He's plugging things up. Something's got to break there in Baltimore because, you know, Heston Kjerstad wasn't good last season when he got called up, but that's because he's like 5 years old. They have so many names on the way, and Kobe Mayo's having a great spring. It looks like Holiday's going to start the season with them. So, like, something is coming to a boiling point there. I do like Esturi Ruiz. If you can get him that cheap in 5x5 or something, I'm all in. Yeah, this is where price really matters. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so this is where price matters. I think sometimes guys who are good in 5x5 because of speed get pushed down too much in points leagues, which is definitely the point there with Esturi Ruiz. I just think where he's going, not in auction, but where he's normally going in 5x5 makes me a little queasy because the potential range of outcomes on that guy are crazy. He was already kind of losing plate appearances towards the end of last season. JJ Bleday's showing a little bit of something this spring. He kind of reminds me of like Jorge Mateo, who like stolen base god, right? And he was left in the lineup because he could field really well. He's a better fielder than Esturi Ruiz. But all of a sudden, the bat was just not good. And MLB teams care less about speed than, you know, your average fantasy manager. And so he ended up losing plate appearances and ultimately the job. I mean, he's aged himself. He's kind of played his way out of relevancy in Baltimore. Different situation in Oakland. Much, much, much worse team. Esturi Ruiz was a key piece of a trade package for them as well. So they have a lot more invested in him than Baltimore had in Jorge Mateo. But I could see things going south for him pretty quickly. But for a dollar, I mean, obviously I'd be in. And Crochet, yeah. So I saw him on your article. Definitely interested in Garrett Crochet. Kind of a fantasy darling years ago. I mean, God, we got to be talking like, I don't know, 2018, 2019, when it was really exciting coming up with all that velocity. Looks like he's going to be a starter. That White Sox rotation, man, good Lord. Good luck to White Sox fans this season. But I do like the Crochet call out. Two names I wanted to throw out to you, Chad. And I swear it's not because I'm a Red Sox fan, but all of a sudden, you know, with the news about Giolito, there's a lot of openings in the Red Sox rotation. Essentially, there's two spots for four dudes. Those four dudes are Cooper Criswell, who I really don't have a lot of interest in. Josh Winkowski, who kind of seems like he's on the outs anyway. And it looks like if it goes the way I want it to go, which it never does, it will be Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck. Now, I hesitate to include Whitlock in that because I'm worried they're like ruining this guy. I mean, lights out bullpen piece looked like the next big thing in anyone's bullpen. Big frame, good velocity coming out of the pen. And then they were like, you know what? You're going to be a starter. I was for that decision. It did not go well. And now he's kind of doing that like Joba Chamberlain jumping back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen. And I worry about that for him. He's not that young anymore. He's going to turn 28 this season. Tanner Houck, though, I am also excited about. Apparently the velocity was up more than any other Red Sox pitcher. I don't know how accurate that is, though. That was Cora's statement weeks ago, and Houck's velocity hasn't been that crazy, but he pitches today, so we'll see. But these two guys all of a sudden have another opportunity to enter the rotation, and they're having pretty good spring trainings, particularly Houck. I was able to get both for a dollar, unsurprisingly, in the Podcasters Ought New League. But when we're talking about late starting pitchers, opportunity is a big thing, right? Like, yeah, there's going to be prospects you like. Maybe they get called up. Maybe you get, you know, Ricky Tiedemann somehow for a dollar and he gets called up and he's great. But trying to find guys who could be good and have the opportunity is really hard to find for a dollar. And I think you're getting both with Houck and Whitlock. So do you have any interest in either of these guys, or is this kind of like, you know what, the ship has sailed. They were exciting 2 years ago. They are not exciting anymore.
Yeah, I think they're both guys who I'm not interested in waiting on. So, and I don't mean that from a draft perspective. I mean that from a having them on my roster perspective. And so what I mean by that is, like, if Cora comes out tomorrow and says, Tanner Houck's our number four starter, Garrett Whitlock's our number five starter, we're setting our rotation, that's that, then yes, I'm interested. Today, I could find myself picking them up for a buck at the end of a draft, but it would have to be a situation where all the other guys I like are sort of gone. And then I am literally like, I'm not waiting at all on them. So like, if, you know, if I pick them up, you know, I have my two drafts Tuesday. If I pick up one of these guys Tuesday for a buck, and on Wednesday, the Red Sox are like, here's our rotation and Winkowski is in, or even if they just say Winkowski's guaranteed a spot, we're really happy with his progress, blah, blah, blah. Like, I would probably cut Whitlock immediately upon hearing that news. I might hold Houck a little longer, but like, neither of those guys will be on my roster come opening day unless they are locked into a rotation spot, because they're just not, the upside exists. And I guess I'm using this as a comparison to like a prospect like Tiedemann, right? Like, I'm not picking up Tiedemann if I'm picking him up because I want him in my, I mean, I do want him in my opening day roster, don't get me wrong, but I'm not picking him up because of that. I'm picking him up because if and when he does get called up, I think he could be an ace. I no longer believe that about Whitlock or Houck. And so I'm not willing to like sit with them on my roster in a minor, in the minors, or in a bullpen role or whatever for months on end. Like, I'm just not interested in that. So the opportunity does really matter there. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this list of starting pitchers that are $1, and like,
I was doing the same thing.
Part of this is like, it depends on where you are in the draft season. So like, early in draft season, I was able to get JP Sears for a dollar. That doesn't happen anymore. I would take JP Sears over these guys. I like, that to me is like, I think he right now has more upside. He's more guaranteed to stay in a rotation. Like, I would take Sears over them. I don't think you can get him for a buck. I think you can get them for a buck. Guys who are consistently going for a dollar, like, would I rather have these guys than Lance Lynn? Yes, I would rather have these guys than Lance Lynn. Again, if they're in the rotation. And right now, I would rather gamble on Houck getting a rotation spot than have a $1 Lynn. I can reply, like, there will be a $1 Lynn, whether it's Lynn himself or someone else, there will be a $1 guy like that available. Zach Little, I mentioned Littell, whatever it is I mentioned before, I like him. I would take him over those guys. I'll have to figure out his name. Frankie Montas, I think I would take. He's had a bad spring, but there's some like signs of things getting better. I think I would take him over them. Let's see who else shows up as a $1.
James Paxton, Will Warren's is one I would take over Houck and Whitlock.
I just traded for a $1 Paxton.
When we're talking about this price range, who cares about Paxton's injury history?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Like, a healthy Paxton is better than Houck and Whitlock. So
sure.
If I'm going to cut any of them the second things go bad, then give me the guy who's just objectively better.
Yeah. Yeah. Paxton. I mean, the $1 Paxton in here is in Ought New League One in the original league. And the team who has him had their trade block update that they had. They needed outfield and they had pitching to trade. They also have a ton of cap space and I needed cap space. And that league, this is where spring training has been a big boost to me. My outfield in that league going into the season looked like it was going to be Spencer Steer, who I mostly would be using on the infield but could use in the outfield. Brendan Donovan, the same. Then I have Soto and Tatis and Yelich at the top. Awesome top of the outfield. 4x4 league, by the way. Then I had Eloy Jimenez, Matt Wallner, Max Kepler, Parker Meadows, Will Benson, and that's it. I like all those guys, but there's a handful of question marks in there, and so it's a lot of depth, but I felt like I needed all that depth. I left one name off that list because I didn't think I could rely on him as part of the depth, and now I do. That's Wyatt Langford. The fact that Wyatt Langford has suddenly seems like almost a lock to make the Rangers opening day lineup, and if not, to be up very shortly thereafter, means that now I have Soto, Tatis, Yelich, and Eloy, and Langford, I mean, as my top four. And then I have Eloy and Kepler and Meadows and Benson, plus the two infielders, Donovan and Steer, who I mentioned before. I traded a $6 Matt Wallner for a $1 James Paxton with no loan. So I cleared $5 in cap space. I swapped out a pitcher for a hitter. Now, Wallner, you know, he had an almost 900, 870 OPS last year. Like,
sure,
he gets on base at a high rate. He hits for good power. Like, he is a good play in 4x4. I was really excited to have him on my roster. But, like, this felt like a no-brainer for me to give myself a little bit of breathing room on the cap, to add a guy who's in this $1 pitcher tier who I think, like you said, if I get 2 months out of James Paxton, I'll be pretty happy with this trade, I think. If I get 4 months out of James Paxton, I'll be thrilled. If I get 2 months, I'll be very happy. There is some risk that, like, you know, it's James Paxton. I may not get a start out of him. Like, his season man tomorrow, we have no idea.
On wood.
So, yeah. But I thought it was just like an opportunity to get in. So, yeah, I mean, for me, if Paxton is in this $1 tier, yeah, I would go get him. Boy, looking at who else. Like, Will Warren is in this list, but he's not likely to be in the rotation. Louis Varland went for $1 twice. I'm not sure that's still the case because it looks like he's more likely to get a rotation spot today than it did a couple weeks ago. So maybe he's going for more right now. I've been generally low on Varland compared to the rest of the analysts out there, right? He is like a fantasy analyst darling. And it's all based on like the stuff plus. There was like one point where it was like his stuff plus is really similar to like Jacob DeGrom. And it's like, yeah, but he's bad. Like, I don't understand. Like, at some point, it's like, great. He's right.
In all your stuff plus leagues, you should definitely roster Louis Varland.
However, when you're getting down into $1 guys and you're looking for some combination of upside and usefulness, he could, should be useful. He has a pretty decent ground ball rate. Like, last year in his 68 major league innings, he had a 44.3% ground ball rate. He gave up a ton of home runs because he had a 21.1% home run per fly ball rate. That should come back down. His XFIP was 3.81. His Sierra was 3.77. The FIP was bad. And for auto new leagues at FIP, for auto new point leagues, they're basically FIP leagues. Like, it's basically what they are. And so, like, that is concerning for those leagues. But, like, I don't think he's going to be an ace, but could he be a useful starting pitcher if that home run per fly ball rate comes down? Yeah. His home run per fly ball rate in 11 spring innings is zero. Now, it's 11 spring innings, right? Like, but the ball, like, balls are flying out of ballparks in, especially, you know, like in these spring games. Like, he hasn't given up a single home run in 11 innings. That's still something. It's something positive to take from what he's doing. I'm intrigued. So, like, if I could get him for a buck, I think I would take him over Hauk or Whitlock at this point. But again, for any of them, it's like, he's another guy who, for me, if he's not in the rotation, which right now I think he will be, but if he's not in the rotation, I'm not interested. I'm not stashing a AAA Louis Varland or a relief pitcher Louis Varland. Maybe as a reliever. If he looks like he's going to be a lights-out reliever and then could come up as a starter, then he gets into that crochet territory, okay, fine. But, yeah. So Varland fits that. Boy, there's two Lance McCullers on here for a dollar. I'm not interested. No, thank you. Call me when he's on a rehab assignment or something.
No, call me when he's on a major league mound.
It's just too late by then.
As a starter.
But, yeah. And then the other thing is then to go the other direction is we talked about like useful right now. Drew Rasmussen, not useful right now, but I do feel confident that he's going to come up at some point and do something. And so I could see stashing him for a buck, but I think I would rather, that's where I might switch and say, no, I think I'd rather have Hauk in a rotation today than Rasmussen likely to be in a rotation in July or August or whatever the timing is.
Yeah, I like all those names. Well, I shouldn't say I like all those names, but I understand the argument for all those names. You know, one you didn't mention, but I think if you can get him for a dollar, you absolutely take him over Hauk and over Whitlock is Tyler McGill, who's this spring definitely playing his way out of the $1 territory. Andrew Abbott was somehow acquired for a dollar. I would take him over despite how brutal he was down the stretch last season. Let's see him adjust. You know, he was a prospect with some upside, so I'd take him over Hauk and Whitlock. I also think I don't view Hauk and Whitlock the same at this point. I think Whitlock's arsenal is maybe more apt to being a starter, but I think when we talk about fantasy, Hauk has more swing and miss stuff, and that makes him more attractive than a lot of these names. Like, I'm definitely going against the grain with this, but I would take him over Zach Littell. I know Littell is picking up a lot of momentum. I'm done trusting the Rays. Littell doesn't get a lot of swings and misses, and Hauk, I think, has the upside to do that. So I kind of view both as like they're probably guys I'll end up cutting, but I think Hauk has a higher ceiling. But overall, I mean, it's tough to really say that you can definitively take one of these guys over another. We're going to take one more break. And when we come back, Chad, I want to talk about what I think is the most thin position in fantasy this season. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Chad Young, Pete Ball, Keeper Cut Podcast. We are breaking down basically values at the end of auctions, at the end of drafts. Certainly the focus has been auctions, but these guys who go for $1 in auctions, believe it or not, they go pretty late in drafts as well. And Chad, the position I want to talk about is outfield, because those of us in five outfielder formats, which is, correct me if I'm wrong here, all of odd new, it can get vicious trying to find outfield help. You know, I have that real Stars and Scrubs team in the Podcasters League. And after the draft, I had Nick Senzel and Alex Verdugo in my outfield. Don't worry, folks. Don't worry. Everything's okay. I acquired Mike Trout, but still, for a minute there, it was pretty ugly. And so I was looking at these names, and I think I like quite a few of them. So, you know, Willier Abreu hit a home run the other day, but I don't know how much the play time is going to be there. We'll have to see. Alec Thomas looked great in the playoffs, but he's largely been a disappointment. Verdugo, kind of out on, despite just admitting I have him. But I do think there's still some potential for $1 outfielders, and it's from the vets. Three names that I found myself getting, and I'm definitely responsible for them being on that list. Hunter Renfroe, who like should play for the Royals. I know he can't find a home on a major league club, but for a while he was really, really good. Chris Towers on CBS basically called him Anthony Santander, but you know, 700 picks later. Mitch Haniger, who I don't trust Mitch Haniger, right, to stay healthy, obviously. If we're not going to trust Lance McCullers, we're not going to trust Mitch Haniger. But he's having a great spring, and you can get him for a dollar at what I think is the thinnest position. And then this guy I think is less exciting than those other two, but I find myself getting Michael Conforto here and there, especially in my deeper leagues. He's dealt with a lot of injuries in his career. He's in one of the worst places to hit, but that lineup around him should be a little bit better. I don't know how much that matters, if it's enough better to really matter, but I'm kind of in on Michael Conforto. So any thoughts on either those names or other $1 outfielders that you're targeting? Because I think people need help with this position.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Renfroe, I think, is an easy one because I think you can move on quickly if you need to. Because we've seen him be useful before, so why not? Conforto, I'm a little worried the shoulder is just never going to let him be right again. But again, we've seen him be good before. And then who did you have in between them? I'm blanking now.
Mitch Haniger.
Oh, yeah. I actually think of the three, I think Haniger might be the one I like the best, because I think like, I have less talent concerns with him than I do with Renfroe. And while I have injury concerns with him, much like I do with Conforto, Conforto's injury concerns are more like, I'm not sure he's actually good because of his injuries. Whereas when Haniger's healthy, he's been decent recently. Like, he hasn't been great anymore, but he's been good. And I think getting back to Seattle could be positive for him. Some other names I would throw out there. Adam Duvall, back in Atlanta, he's a platoon guy. Alec Thomas, also a platoon guy, but like, I like those platoon guys for a buck because it like, I'm not going to get as many games out of them, but especially in the outfield, like even if you're looking at Duvall and saying, I am literally only going to play this guy against lefties, you can play him against every lefty and he'll get you a buck of value in that role. He's not often going for a dollar, but he shows up on this list of $1 guys. So Brian De La Cruz, he started off spring with like two of his hardest hit balls ever. And now has sort of cooled off and hasn't had a great spring. But like, I still think like a guy hitting two balls harder than he ever hit them before in the same early spring game is sort of an intriguing data point. And I liked him before, so I'm willing to go after him. Another veteran who I think was better than people realize, again, sort of in the Duvall mold, except you can only use him at home, is Charlie Blackmon. People want to think Charlie Blackman's done, and he kind of is, but done at Coors Field is not necessarily bad for fantasy. Looking at other names here, I mean, Colton Cowser went for a dollar in one league. There's no way you're getting a $1 Colton Cowser.
Yeah, no chance there.
Certainly not. If you can, go for it. We talked about Estuary Ruiz earlier, but I would like, I paid $2 for him in a points league. I paid $2 for him in a points league last week because I needed outfield help. And I think that there's some upside in that bat. We mentioned Renfro. I just sorted this list by name and I'm going through it, which is why all these names are coming out in alphabetical order. Jock Peterson, he went for a buck in one league. Again, you're only going to use him in his platoon role, but like, I think that's fine. There's a bunch of names. Let me scroll a little faster and see if anyone else jumps out at me. But Mike Yastrzemski fits that veteran, you know, some question marks. I know there's been some buzz around Sal Frelick in the spring, and part of that is like he might play some third base or something. I'm not as in on him, but other people are. And so this is one of those moments where I'm just going to acknowledge that, like, I think I'm pretty good at this. I think I make pretty good recommendations. I'm happy with the players I pick. Sal Frelick is not one of those players. There are other people who are smarter than me and better at this than I am. And some of them like Frelick. So he's probably a guy you should have on your list or at least take a deeper look at. There's a $1 Spencer Jones in there. And I don't know how long we might have to wait for him. It might not be very long. He's looked pretty good, and the Yankees are not exactly bastions of health. So, Trent Grisham. If he gets playing time, I think he could be an interesting play. That, like, you talked about the short porch for Soto, and I actually think in a weird way, like, Soto is almost too good for that short porch because he sprays the ball all over the park. When he does pull home runs, they're often bombs anyways. Grisham, when he plays, that short porch is just made for him. Like, decent power to the pull side. Yeah, Grisham, I think, is an interesting $1 guy. Willier Abreu went for a buck. I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. It's a little unclear what that Boston outfield is going to look like. Like, if Rafael really locks down center field, is Abreu a fourth outfielder? Is Abreu going to be in AAA? Like, are they going to send him down to wait for an opportunity?
So with the Vaughn Grissom injury, it looks like Rafael is going to play quite a bit at second base, which makes his eligibility really interesting. It also really muddies the water on Grissom, who went quite expensive in a few of my leagues, because if Rafael is hitting and playing well, does Grissom get called up right away? I don't know about that. He's a terrific center fielder. But point being, at the beginning of the year, Willie Abreu might actually be getting some plate appearances, whereas, you know, that may not have been true a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality, my opinion is, I think Grissom will get called up right away because there are multiple players. There's so many paths to him having time. Like, Rafaela could be not that good. Literally any of the outfielders could be struggling. Story could get hurt. Like, there's so many things that could happen that would make Grissom a fit on the major league roster that I think there will be an opportunity for him when it's there. And they, like, I don't know. They gave up Sale to get him. Like, I don't think it was a small investment, right? Like they just believe in him.
Right. The franchise.
And I think sometimes I think people get caught up in this idea that, like, oh, they paid so much for him, they have no choice but to play him. And that's not what I'm saying, right? That's the sunk cost fallacy, right? Like, you don't play him because you spent so much on him. You play on it. You play him because you believe he's your best option there, but you give up so much because you believe he'll be your best option there. And so the last data point we have on what the Red Sox think of Vaughn Grissom is basically, we are willing to give up Chris Sale to get you. And that tell, like, that won't have changed when he's healthy and ready. So I think, you know, he may get some time. He will get a rehab assignment of some kind just because he basically didn't have a spring. Fine. I think he'll be up shortly after that, though. So.
Yeah, nope, totally fair. So with that kind of concluding our outfield thoughts, I mean, I don't know if there's any other guys. We kind of just threw a ton of names out there. Bottom line, it's a tough position. If you can get one of these guys that we like for a dollar, I say go for it, even if that is a player like Willy Abreu who you're going to cut after the first few weeks. Hopefully not. I hope he's basically Mike Trout, but seems unlikely. Are there any other names, Chad, outside of outfield that you're looking and you're like, these are guys you absolutely need to target late in your auctions to solidify your team? I know we've covered a lot, but is there anybody who slipped through the cracks between all this positional talk?
Yeah, I mean, this is still like, this is where I shop for relief pitchers, and they got guys like Ronaldo Lopez, Julian Merriweather, Brock Stewart, I mentioned before. Yuki Matsui went for a dollar in two of my leagues. Woosuck Go has been going for a buck, but he hasn't looked very good in the spring, so I'm maybe a little cooler.
Yeah, I'm a little worried there.
Another outfielder, and this is a guy who was not really on my radar, and he's been on yours historically, and I have come around to him, although maybe for a different reason. This guy, former top prospect, has been very bad. However, and I did not realize this, last year against lefties, wait, I'm losing my what I was looking at here.
Could it
last
be
year against lefties, he had a, what is going on with my, I'm scrolling terribly here, a 165 WRC plus against lefties last year, 426 WOBA. That is a 347 average, 389 on base, 619 slugging. There's a 372 BAPIP, but there's a lot of room for a 372 BAPIP to correct on a 426 WOBA and still be
don't
good.
Say it. Don't say it. I know who it is.
Nick Senzel.
Nick Senzel. Yes. Yes.
I did not realize dude has crushed lefties. And that is, I am not super in on Senzel, like turning a corner, figuring it out, becoming the guy we thought he would be. But he has a career 108 WRC plus against lefties. That includes a lot of really bad years. He was awesome against them last year. I'm sort of buying in on him as a $1 outfielder that you can slot in against lefties. Now, the challenge is he's not super reliable as a bench bat. Like, I mean, he's going to be on your bench, obviously, but he's not super reliable because, like, if you need him one day and they're facing a righty, you really probably shouldn't use him. Maybe he gets better against him, but, like, he was really good against lefties last year. He has third base and outfield eligibility. I think he's an interesting $1 play. So,
wow.
Come around on Nick Senzel.
I love to hear it. He's a good example of how, like, look, at some point you have to ignore prospect pedigree. He's going to turn 29 this season. I don't care how good of a prospect he was. It's irrelevant at this point. It just is. At the same time, if he can stay on the field, which I know is like useless saying, but like, I don't know. He's a professional athlete. Like, maybe he's figured out a way to stay in the field. The playing time is going to be there. It will be if he's healthy, obviously. That team sucks, so he's going to play, and I don't know. I'd be interested. We haven't really seen him unleashed with the new stolen base rules, for example, so could he be a sneaky 20 stolen base target in your leagues that count steals? Yeah. I mean, if it's that late in the draft where we're in Nick Senzel territory, he is a guy I would kind of target thinking maybe I can squeeze 15 steals out of this player. He's a great athlete. He's very quick, and he doesn't strike out a lot, so there will be opportunities for him to get on base. Again, if he's on the field. So I don't mind that at all. I just think, you know, like you said, right from the start, it's for different reasons than why we liked him before. I loved him before because I thought, you know, he's going to stay healthy. He's going to stay healthy. He's going to get this opportunity. He's such a great prospect. That doesn't matter anymore. But if the opportunity's there, then let's do it. I'm all in. I don't have too many guys myself that we haven't covered yet. I think, you know, with the suspension of Noelvi Marte and the news that Jonathan Adia is finally healthy, I think getting him for a dollar is interesting, but I don't think you're going to get him for a dollar. I think that was kind of like an anomaly. Drew Thorpe could be fun. Now that there is a rotation spot, you actually kind of turned me on to him. He's been traded twice in the last like 2 months. So, you know, teams aren't really in love with him apparently, but we'll see with the opportunity there. And I guess Joey Ortiz, if we're just touching upon names real quick, the opportunity could be there in Milwaukee. He was part of the Corbin Burns package. And, you know, he was a decent prospect for the Orioles. He was just lost in the shuffle because they have so many elite prospects over there in Baltimore. Chad, I guess to end it, why don't we make a prediction here? Who is the $1 prospect that will still be on rosters next year? So a guy that is a prospect right now that you can throw a dollar at. That means that rules out your Ricky Tiedemans, right? Because they go for more than a dollar. But who's the $1 prospect that everyone sees gets nominated and they're like, whatever, that you think will be kept through arbitration into the 2025 season?
Boy, that's an interesting question. I'm sort of torn on this. So I'm only looking at guys who went for a dollar at least twice, because I like, you know, sometimes guys go for a buck because of like weird auction situations. They're not really $1 guys, but it's like one guy who's gone for a dollar twice is Lazaro Montes from Seattle. And like, he's not going to be up this year. He's probably going to keep mashing in the minors. And like, if you picked him up for a buck, you picked him up for a buck because you're going to keep him. You did not, or trade him, I guess. And if you trade for him, you trade for him because you're going to keep him. Like, he's not, his path to being cut is pretty narrow. He'd have to really, really underperform or get badly hurt. Otherwise, people are going to, you're dreaming on him long term. That's why you have him. So I think he probably fits that. Xavier Isaac, another name in a similar boat where like, this isn't going to be his year anyways, probably. So in terms of guys who might be up this year or might really impact things, Snelling is the guy who stands out to me. Like, I think if at some point this year the Padres need pitching, they will likely turn to him at some point. And I think he'll be a good enough pitcher to stick around for $3 next year.
Love it. Yep. I've got Snelling in a few spots. He was one of those guys who went for $1 in all four of those leagues that we're looking at there. So that's a pretty consistent pick. I thought about going with Andy Pyes for this, kind of steal your guy, but I just don't think you're getting him for a dollar anymore. You know, in a few auctions, maybe. I guess one name, it's not really a great pick. I don't feel super passionately about it, but for me, it'd be Luis Angel Acuna, who I just feel like he's already being labeled as like, he's just a speed guy. I don't know how entirely fair that is. Like, I offered him in a deal among other pieces to somebody and they're like, he's not good in this format. Well, he doesn't have a major league appearance yet. What do you mean he's not good in this format yet? like, I get it. He's definitely, you know, you look at the prospect grades, he doesn't project out to be some amazing hitter or anything like that. And he definitely is a steals oriented player. So he's going to have more value in your 5x5, your category leagues. But he's posted really solid walk rates throughout the minor leagues. He did have 7 homers in 402 plate appearances. So as he gets older and gets into the major leagues, if he is a 550 plate appearance guy, could he give you 15 homers? Like, I don't think that's like a crazy thing to say at this point. And that was a 121 WRC plus last season through 402 plate appearances at AA. So it's not like this is just some stolen base guy who's going to get called up and, you know, like an Esteury Ruiz. Like, I think he's potentially a better hitter and could have some value even in those formats. And he is pretty consistently everywhere I've seen gone for just a buck. So I don't feel super passionate about that pick, but for now, I guess I would go with Luis Angel Acuna.
Makes sense.
Awesome. Well, that's over an hour of content right there. Plenty of names discussed in this episode to target late in your drafts, late in your auctions, if you still haven't gone. But a lot of these names, even if your auction has already taken place, are probably sitting out there in your free agent pool. So put in a claim and bring them in. We will see you folks again next week. Please follow the show at Keeper Cut. You can follow Chad at Chad Young. You can follow me, but I don't think I've tweeted in over a month at Pete B Baseball. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.